Welcome to NACE Clinical Highlights. I am Dr. Brad Glick, and I am Clinical Assistant Professor of Dermatology at the Herbert Wertheim College of Medicine at Florida International University in Miami. Joining me today for a discussion about the evolving management of atopic dermatitis is Dr. Yasmin Kerkorian. Yasmin is Chief of Dermatology at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., an Associate Professor of Dermatology and Pediatrics, Children's National Hospital, George Washington School of Medicine and Health Sciences. I'm excited to spend a few minutes with her to discuss this important topic. Welcome, Yasmin.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Atopic dermatitis is a chronic, intensely pruritic, inflammatory skin disease that represents a complex interplay between the environment, genetics, and the immune system. How we manage atopic dermatitis has changed dramatically, particularly over the past 5 years with the discovery and launch of new molecules and targeted therapies to treat this condition. Let's start off by discussing how we approach the assessment and management of these patients. So Yasmin, I'd like to start off today by having you define for us the burden of disease in atopic dermatitis. Tell us about it.
So atopic dermatitis is the most common inflammatory skin disorder in human beings, and it affects up to 20 to 30% of children and 7 to 10% of adults. So clearly there's an enormous burden of disease. And so I'm really excited about this conversation today because we finally really have new tools, both FDA approved and coming, to help our patients with this condition.
Talk about quality of life issues and how it relates to clinical practice, how you kind of measure quality of life, how you assess your patients, and the overall impact on our patients, and maybe even tell us a little bit of how you quantify itch.
Sure. So, you know, quality of life is critical. And in clinical trials, there are, of course, approved instruments that are used to objectively measure quality of life. In clinical practice, the, you know, itch measures or other measures we really don't use routinely. Certainly some people do in their clinics. But when we think globally about quality of life, we're asking questions about primarily itch, because that is the symptom that is the most disturbing to patients and that impacts everything else. Everything else includes sleep, school performance, work performance, relationships with others, self-esteem, and so forth. In clinical practice, the way that I quantify that is asking questions about, for example, how many nights per week is the sleep disturbed for the child, and not just the child, because often the children will be sleeping with the parents. So how many nights per week does the child come to your bed? How often does the child miss school due to fatigue? Or need to go to the doctor because they're in a crisis state. Sometimes we may ask a 1 out of 10 sort of global scale for itch, but those are sort of the ways clinically we're asking those questions. And then in terms of just itch specifically, so I think that that's the most important symptom to really think about, because that really drives the suffering in this disease. So sleep deprivation due to itch, I think, is the number one issue. And we know from studies that this leads to poor school performance, mood disturbance, maybe even issues such as ADHD and learning challenges. And even controversially, some think possibly disturbances in growth. So this is really an issue for the whole family.
Yeah, it seems to me one of the things we talked about before is that, you know, you lose one night of sleep, you wake up the next day, and you kind of don't feel very well. You can imagine a child, even an adult who has sleep deprivation on a regular basis, it would be significantly impactful on their quality of life. So now that we've talked about the burden of disease in atopic dermatitis, let's discuss what the therapies are that we have at our avail and those that are emerging. Why don't you tell us about what we have now and maybe what's coming in the toolbox moving forward?
Sure. So I think I'll start with topicals because I think most of us think of our first line management as topical medications, and then we can get into systemic meds. So in terms of topical meds, it's important to remember that topical corticosteroids will still remain the mainstay of eczema, especially in our mild to moderate patients. And often we have a problem that people will underuse their topicals rather than overuse them. So I think there's a sort of fear of overuse of topical steroids where many patients, at least in my practice, come in having been told to limit their steroids to a certain number of days or a certain number of quantity. And often that's why they're not getting the improvement that we would expect. So generally speaking, I think it's first important to put out the fire of the acute flare with the topical corticosteroids that are have an appropriate potency depending on the nature of the eczema and the location on the body. And once you've calmed that acute flare, you then often want to implement your steroid sparing medications, such as the topical calcineurin inhibitors or crisaborole. In both cases, they can be very useful, I think, more in a maintenance role than in an actual acute flaring role. And you may also want to have your patients sort of applying the topical corticosteroids even on their hot spots, even when there isn't active involvement that's been shown to be beneficial. In terms of topicals that are coming, that's an exciting area. So we have a novel mechanism in a medication, tapinarof, which is a topical aryl hydrocarbon receptor modulating agent, and it can affect multiple pathways of inflammation in the skin to kind of reestablish skin homeostasis. So it'll be exciting to see how that will work. We also have multiple topical PDE4 inhibitors coming, roflumilast, defamilast, which similar to crisaborole, will affect that pathway of PDE4 inflammation. And then there are topical JAK inhibitors coming or that are in clinical trials currently. So those are the topicals that are, you know, currently in use. And that, again, will be the mainstay for most of our patients. But we, as referral specialists, also have many children who have used topical steroids and topical calcineurin inhibitors and crisaborole, and they come to us in crisis. And that's when I would start to think about systemic medications.
So what are those systemic therapies? I know that we have one in particular that's in the toolbox right now. Why don't you tell us about dupilumab, you know, its use in practice, your use in practice, and maybe say a few words about some of the newer therapies. And then what we'll do is we'll move on and we'll talk about some case scenarios.
So I think, you know, being a young pediatric dermatologist, it's been very exciting to see dupilumab really change the face of our treatment of atopic dermatitis in children and surely in adults as well. So, you know, as you know, dupilumab is a monoclonal antibody to IL-4, IL-13. And what we love about it is that it's FDA approved down to age 6 and in clinical trials down to 6 months of age. And so this finally gives us an FDA approved drug to use in children, of which there was none before, despite the fact that it's prevalent in 20 to 30% of children. It is quite safe, and it's, I think, an excellent choice for our children in whom topical steroids have failed. Now, you may wonder, you know, can we just get dupilumab for everybody who's failed, you know, their topical methods and their emollients and so forth? And, you know, it's important to note that FDA approval doesn't necessarily mean access. So, in many cases, if you can go straight to dupilumab after you failed the first line therapies, that would be great. But in many cases, especially with public insurance, we need other non-FDA approved systemic immunosuppressants that to demonstrate that we've used those before we can get the dupilumab approved. So in my hands, that's typically cyclosporin, which I give for a 3-month period to quickly achieve efficacy and, you know, improve the child's quality of life and itch while we're bridging to the dupilumab.
And what about some of the new therapies that are coming?
So that's, I think, kind of exciting, because I think we all know from our psoriasis experience that, you know, you may start with one medication and may work great for a period of time, but then either you have waning efficacy or other reasons in which you need to change to other members of the toolbox. So I think it's important to have a toolbox. So what's coming down the pike, I'm going to kind of separate them based on mechanism. So we have some IL-13 inhibitors such as lebrikizumab and tralokinumab, an IL-31 inhibitor, which really the so-called itch cytokine. So that's nemolizumab. Then there are a variety of JAKs that are in clinical trials, abrocitinib, baricitinib, upadacitinib, and others. And those are kind of the main ones that I see coming. There are many other molecules that are part of the inflammatory pathway of eczema. Of course, it's a very complex condition, including molecules that inhibit neurokinin 1 receptor, TSLP, IL-22, and others. So I think the ones that are closest to market that are, you know, in trials in adolescents and adults are those first three, the IL-13, IL-31, and the JAKs. So I think what will be interesting interesting is to see, you know, how are we going to transition from one to another? Are we going to have head-to-head data? How will we pick maybe certain ones for certain ethnic populations versus others? For example, if there's, you know, more of an IL-17 proclivity in certain types of eczema or certain patients, then maybe we would look at those drugs like ustekinumab. So I think it'll be really interesting, you know, once the experts and scientists write those papers to see how we're going to utilize that toolbox.
Well, it's pretty clear we're going to have a wave, particularly with the JAK inhibitors. So it'll be nice to have a full toolbox for our patients with atopic dermatitis, much like we have for our patients with psoriatic disease. So I find it helpful to think about specific case scenarios that we encounter on a day-to-day basis in clinical practice, and maybe taking some of the current therapies we have and putting them into use. So I'd like to share some case scenarios with you and see how you would handle them in practice. Let's start with the first one, a three-month-old infant with bright red erythema and scale, widespread, crying unconsolably. What do you do for the patient and also for the parents?
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite kinds of patients to take care of, because almost in every case, you can make them dramatically better quickly with topical medication. So often this will be a crisis. Like you said, the family's not sleeping. It's a new baby, so they're already kind of living in a difficult time. And they come in, and when you have this, what I do is a rescue plan. So I actually prescribe a 1 pound jar of triamcinolone ointment, 0.1%, and I have them go apply it everywhere for this two-week so-called rescue period. And everywhere includes the face and so-called sensitive areas, because we know short-term use will not lead to skin atrophy or harm to the patient. And I think it's critical during that time period that you advise them that you will come and see them again in exactly 2 weeks, because I think people can then improve their compliance. The way that I have them apply it is a daily bath with just warm water, no soap or minimal soap just to the diaper area, no scrubbing, just using the hands for bathing. Many patients have been told that they shouldn't bathe and all these controversies. And I think there isn't great data on bathing, but the consensus of pediatric dermatologists and allergists is daily bathing is best. So we do a daily bath. Then after the skin is damp, you immediately apply your topical steroid. You allow some time to pass and then put your emollient, your bland emollient, and do reapply that bland emollient multiple times a day. I personally only have the steroid applied once a day because I think that there's equal efficacy to BID application. It makes it a little bit easier for the family. And in most cases, I would say the vast majority, 90%+, you see dramatic improvement at the 2 week mark. And then you can go ahead and establish your maintenance. And the children in whom are going to have very severe chronic recalcitrant eczema will declare themselves, but those are quite rare in that young age group.
I would say to the audience that while we don't have a systemic therapy approved down to the age of 3 months just yet, I believe at least crisaborole we do have approved down to the age of 3 months. So, you know, once again, I think that's a great pearl for the audience. And I really appreciate that. It really helps me a lot. I would tend to reach out for a systemic steroid. So I really like that pearl of using that topical triamcinolone. Let's talk about a 27-year-old with a 20-year history of atopic dermatitis. Has been on dupilumab for several months, initially approved, now worsening. What do you do with that patient if they're breaking through?
Yeah, so I mean, as with all patients in dermatology, we always going to reassess our diagnosis if something is different. So it is most likely that this just is his baseline atopic dermatitis, but I would entertain the possibility that this could be a superimposed allergic or irritant contact dermatitis. I would also consider, although extremely rare, that there could be a break mycosis fungoides presenting itself. There have been some cases of that, and I would consider a biopsy if that remained a concern. And just think through my eczematous differential diagnosis to make sure this really fits. But assuming we think this is just his native eczema breaking through, which does happen even including in adolescents that I've cared for, in that case, I would generally add on methotrexate at quite a low dose, 2.5 milligrams to 5 milligrams a week, potentially to recapture the efficacy. And I would increase the dose of methotrexate if that lower dose did not work. But I found even those very low doses can recapture efficacy in some people. If we did that and did not recapture efficacy, that's where I would turn to my adult colleagues for clinical trials at this time. But soon enough, I believe we'll have other drugs FDA approved. And then at that point, we'll sort of have to look at the literature to decide, okay, then do I go to a completely different kind of inflammatory pathway like a JAK inhibitor? I think that would be my inclination. But I think the literature is going to guide us with that going forward.
Couldn't agree more. So here's a tough one. Here's a 9-year-old with eczema, not sleeping. Parents have tried topical steroids, but are hesitant to continue the use with these agents. You've tried cycling, topical calcium urine inhibitors, not helpful. Brief trial of crisaborole. Child complains that it's burning. Child is sleep deprived, unable to concentrate at school. It's confirmed by the teachers. Child's becoming depressed in the eyes of the parents. What do you do?
Yeah, so this is quite a common one, again, as a referral center that we experience. So I think by the time they get to us, they are in crisis, and we should respond to this as if it were a real crisis, which it is. So, you know, assuming that you really feel that they've done topicals appropriately, because sometimes, you know, you go through the topicals and it turns out it was a 20-gram tube or whatever. But putting aside those challenges, that if you're convinced, and in most cases it's true, they've done the appropriate topicals, the steroid-sparing agents, emollients, and they still have persistent severe disease, then I would have no hesitance to, from the first visit, get them queued up to be on a systemic medication, which in this time, the FDA-approved drug would be dupilumab, and that's the drug I would like to use. Depending on their insurance, I would most likely bridge them with the cyclosporine, even if they have an insurance that might immediately approve the dupilumab, which is not been my experience. I think you still have a reasonable, you have good reason to consider using cyclosporine to get them out of that crisis. I can't tell you how many families have told me their children finally got a good grade for the first time. They finally slept after we did that cyclosporine bridge. So it's not taking lightly. It is a serious medication. It has potential for very serious adverse effects, but in short-term use, I think that those adverse effects are very, very uncommon. You do need to see them monthly and monitor them, and I don't plan long-term therapy, but I would plan to get this kid labs that day, initiate cyclosporine that day, and begin the process of getting them onto the dupilumab, which has quite a nice safety profile, really very few adverse effects, has no lab draws, which is extremely attractive in children, and all around has been really life-altering for many of my patients.
Well, Dr. Kerkorian, I thank you so much for this very helpful information. It's been great having the time and opportunity to speak with you, and so you can share your expertise and how we can improve the quality of life for our patients, and, you know, not only the pediatric patients, but also our adults, patients with atopic dermatitis. I think the guidance you provided today will help us greatly improve the care for our patients overall who are suffering with this disease.
Thank you so much for the invitation to speak. It's really important that we care for these patients, and I'm excited to be here today.
If you're interested in learning more about atopic dermatitis, go to our website at naceonline.com and register for our enduring activities on atopic dermatitis or any other program we have developed. Please like us on Facebook at NACME to be part of our online social media community and get access to our other content and programs we share. I want to thank you, our audience, for joining us for this podcast. I hope you've learned something new that you can bring back to your practice. We look forward to having you join us for other upcoming podcasts in the near future.